Okay, we got board time Wednesday, 14 May.
Okay, you got it. I trust that decision.
So I don't know what else we could give that alliance. I see they're here with their hand out.
I guess he's going first. Go for it.
Okay.
I thought I signed something the other day to give him the barn.
I tried to slip something to you, but it didn't work.
It didn't work?
No. Actually, we, and actually maybe the introductions, in case you don't know, John Peterson from, is it?
Don't ask him to explain anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you close the whiteboard there? We don't want him working on the whiteboard. And then, of course, Neil Kimsey on the board.
That's Greg Kimsey's father.
Yes, I know Neil. Mm-hmm.
And we really just wanted to bring you quickly up to date on, as you recall, last year, the Board of County Commissioners basically made a policy decision to move forward and enter into the Discovery Clean Water Alliance along with the district and Richfield and Battleground. Mm-hmm. And over the past several months, we've been working together with the district, Chris Horn, and some of the other folks at the district to work through just some of the details of the actual how it's all going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we've worked through two agreements. One is an asset transfer agreement, which basically what it does is it lays out all the conditions to, as of January 1, 2015, to just transfer the assets to the Discovery Clean Water Alliance. And there's a lot of detail in there. A lot of it's just kind of some legal issues. Relied a lot on Chris to help out with that. And then the second agreement is the franchise agreement, which basically lays out the expectations for any work that's done in county right-of-way and things related to easements and any maintenance work that has to happen in the roadways. So they're pretty detailed agreements. I did bring copies of them if you'd like, and I don't know if feel free to add anything to it. That's very high-level, brief overview.
I kid John all the time. He is such a detailed person.
I learned, yeah.
You ask him a question, and he'll tell you when it started of the wagons, right, when they came out west. So
I've learned.
That's a compliment, John.
So I've learned
it is, because you never go away with not understanding the issue and the history.
Yep.
So what we're doing, we're slowly transferring all of our assets. We talk about assets, so we're talking about the tools and the tool shed that for the treatment plant and all the vehicles that go with that.
Pump stations.
And then we have different right-of-way issues and mm-hmm. all our contracts that we have and so on. And I think that's what I saw the other day that we tried to put through. And those are agreements with the Washington Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. Where we have easements. Mm-hmm. So we were transferring those over to the Alliance also. Mm-hmm.
Well, not you have to be careful. If the easements relate to solely a sewer treatment plant-related facility, then yes, we might have transferred the easement. If they're in our right-of-way, then they have that's where the franchise comes in.
Yes.
So we're not turning over any county right-of-way or any county roads or any county park property, but any property that we acquired solely for the treatment plant or treatment plant regional facilities, then those would go with the treatment, with the transfer of the treatment plant. So this will be the plant, everything that's you historically think of as down at the bottom of, I forgot what road it is right at hand.
Yeah.
McCann. That all would go to the sewer alliance, and then what the franchise does is it essentially says with all of our utility holders that we have these agreements and the ones we seek to want us to continue getting. But basically, it creates a relationship so that they coordinate with us and with other utilities so that we can make room for everybody's infrastructure in our right-of-way, and so that the public, we minimize the inconvenience to the public, but still give them the ability to do the necessary improvements that they have and that we coordinate.
And when they dig it up, they got asphalt over it. Same as we do
telephone.
And whatever, all your normal permitting processes.
I am curious, so when it comes to the history, there's been large millions of dollars that have been spent to purchase and build those facilities. I expect that was that from the county?
And ratepayers.
Well, what you'll find is a good share of it was, it's kind of interesting because you're thinking exactly the same way I do, which is why are we not selling it? And the answer to that question really revolves around two concerns. The first is the lion's share of the money that was used to build the treatment plant was grant funding. And so you treat it as an asset and depreciate and do different things based on where its value and the grant value is filled into that. Mm-hmm. But later on, the county became just, we no longer had a treatment plant customers. We became basically what you'd consider a wholesaler. And we had two primary customers. We had the Hazeldale Sewer District and the City of Battleground. And they bought up all the capacity at the plant. So when we had to expand the plant, they paid for it. So future improvements after about 1990, all were paid for by Battleground and Hazeldale, either directly or through the rates.
But still under the title of the county?
Yeah, but basically the view was the public's paid for this,
yeah,
whether directly or indirectly, and so it doesn't make sense for us to charge the public twice. Whoever owns it, somebody's still going to operate it, and the public still will need it. So the idea is we're transferring it because the public's paid for it, and it's just going to a new public purveyor that will be a coordinated group of entities, the Alliance.
And headed up by some very good people.
Yeah, similar to annexation, we don't.
Well, that's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, we don't sell assets. I mean, they just take them.
No, but you're not required to transfer all the things that would normally have gone with this. If this were a treatment plant in an annexation area, it wouldn't necessarily go with the annexation. Okay. So it's a little different.
Okay. So our next step is what we're hoping to do is there's a few technical things we need to work out on, actual legal descriptions and things like that, but we are going to bring it forward to a consent agenda for your approval to move forward, and surely there behind that will be the...
And I would like a copy of the documents, not to read them all now, but be able to do some, at least to browse through for homework.
The only thing, I didn't include the appendix with all the legal documents, like it's basically Thank survey you. Boundaries. I did not include that. So. Did you want...
I've
seen
been fortunate
it,
enough to... Do we have it all explained to me by John?
Yeah.
You need to get out of here, John.
Yeah.
I'm on him all the time.
But they've been great to work with, and I think this is a really good thing.
Everybody has, so. And I tell you, the alliance to bring together Battleground, Hazeldale Sewer, and Ridgefield, they all had assets, they all had a dog in the fight, they all had things to give up. Through the transition, I believe that Hazeldale Sewer, which could become part of the Alliance, will also be taking over part of Ridgefield Sewer. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Because Ridgefield couldn't afford to do it, and the people that lived there couldn't afford to pay that kind of a rate. So it has really been a big win for everybody and an asset to the whole county, because as that comes down from the north and comes down here, it also is... pre-planned, it can. We have capacity there that belongs to somebody else. We also recognize that we can hook up to Vancouver in the future if we need more capacity. So it's been a well planned out, well worked out.
Yeah,
and that will contribute to our economic development efforts as well.
Yeah, I had inch by inch explained to me by John as we come out of Battleground and where that cuts off and where it comes out of Ridgefield. Mm-hmm. Very good.
I am curious. I understand that Ridgefield has really high sewer rates. Is there something that will eventually bring that down to make that more affordable for those citizens?
Yes, that was something we studied extensively through the regional sewer study process, and the arrangement we've been able to work out with the city. We took over their system January 1st, 2014 this year, and worked out a framework in our agreements where initially, because their rates were going up dramatically, that they will stabilize initially in these first few years, and then there's actually a built-in mechanism where they will trend down and eventually become the same rate as the whole service area for the district.
Okay.
So that's all built built in.
The sewer rate was getting close to the mortgage rate. So.
Yeah.
Not quite in that direction.
So when about will you expect, how many years before they get to be pretty normal in their rates compared to others?
It actually, an interesting part of that is it will depend on growth to some degree. Both the Ridgefield Council and our district board were fairly entrepreneurial. They have a lot of folks that own their own businesses that are now serving the community on these elected boards. So the formula that they have built into it is based on the number of connections that happen in Ridgefield. The quicker that happens, the more quickly the rates stabilize. So we all keep working hard to prop those floodgates open, and it'll happen sooner.
Great. Okay. So I guess we got a green light.
Awesome thing, much better than your RSN.
Oh. That's really good.
I really don't know how to cut him, don't I? I'm just full of it. Get shot.
Must be all that sunshine.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
We're on.
Thank you.
Good to see you, gentlemen. Thank you again.
We'll see you Friday also at the Alliance Board meeting. That'll be our second touch on these agreements. We did review them a month ago with the Alliance Board on April 18th. Pretty detailed discussion there, and all four agencies appeared to be supportive of this. So we'll do a second touch, and we anticipate likely getting the green light on Friday to bring it forward.
The thoroughness of this alliance coming together is mind-boggling. And has not been easy in agreement all the way. It's been give and push and tuck and an awesome job.
Yeah, that was a
tremendous asset for
Bill
the
Barron and Pete Capel and you. Is that the three musketeers, right?
I would say in all sincerity, it wouldn't happen without the county because of this marquee asset that the whole region relies on.
Yeah.
That you built.
And it goes back farther than that. It goes back to Senator Joe Zarelli getting the seed money, absolutely.
We'll have a little bit of a chance, maybe just in passing, and I promise it won't be long, Commissioner. We sent out an invitation that likely many of you got or will receive in the next few days for a groundbreaking ceremony on June 4th for the transmission project that we're building between Ridgefield and Salmon Creek that brings Ridgefield connected to this regional system.
Will that be the mounting of the antenna on the amphitheater?
That'll be another important step, but 2 o'clock, the Key Creek rest area on I-5 at 2 o'clock, where a regional pump station in the middle of the whole system will be constructed.
And the tours are always available?
Yeah. I've done the tour. Amazing.
Stuff.
I got the e-ticket tour.
Yeah, stay really out of the aeration tanks.
On behalf of the Alliance.
Yeah, don't sink to the bottom, right?
We want to say thank you to the county board for their policy support, and certainly to staff for all the work. It's been almost a year working on these agreements to get everything perfected and reviewed, and it's a very comprehensive package, and it's been scrubbed very well, and Chris does a great job looking out for the county interests there, but also being a reasonable partner. So.
Yeah.
Appreciate where we are, and that's all because of the county being willing to put some energy behind all of this.
I was just going to say that without the attorneys, they're keeping us out of trouble.
That's right.
Making sure that every T is crossed and every I is dotted, and it's been an eye opener how much things there are to do, how many different.
Yeah. I got a draft update from Chris at 1:30 in the morning.
It happens.
One dedicated guy. I came in here on a Saturday thinking I forgot something. There's Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thanks, Chris, for all your hard work.
Yes.
On June 4, 2 p.m., we're going to be in board time just like this, so we won't be able to do it unless we schedule board time differently.
How bad do you want to be there?
Great. Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Let you go on to your
other topics
here.
See you later.
Thank you,
Chris.
John,
thank you, John.
You know, I just kid you.
Yeah, I know that. I know you love me.
That's really
yes.
You feel the love, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll see you Friday.
Okay.
Good to see you too. Yes, good meeting.
You staying for the Bonfield thing?
I'm glad. Sure.
This one's not on television.
No, I know.
You do record it. Yes.
Okay, now we've got the Weston Camp Bonneville contract amendment.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. As you're aware, the Army has agreed that cleaning up the Camp Bonneville site, the Central Valley flora of the Camp Bonneville site, has been more complicated in some respects because the Army, as they were using the site, regraded it, and so they're finding munitions and debris at depths that would not traditionally be associated with that kind of munition, bullets way deeper than you would expect them to be able to go. The effect has been that the Army has approved an increase in their funding. The contract amounts, it's very difficult to say that the contract funding has gone up $6 million or $7 million or a certain amount. It has gone up at least $7.1 million. The reason it's difficult to answer that question is because some of the work has been shifted around. Some of the work that was originally associated or was assigned to Weston will be moved to another group. And so that's all happening also. But the net effect is that for the Central Valley floor cleanup, certainly that amount has been increased in the range of about $7 million due to the far more labor-intensive nature of the work. Rather than just relying on computer modeling that leads them to the magic bullet, they're finding that it's a lot more basically metal detectors or what they call mag and dig. And so because the Army's approved this and we are the pass-through between, we have no obligation to pay money to Weston beyond the amount that's given to us by the Army. It has now been given to us. We told Weston we weren't going to sign this agreement until the Army approved it because we didn't want to bind you to pay money that you didn't have.
Yep.
Now we have it. So okay. This is the second step in that process. And it allows Weston to come up. They're going to plan on bringing six more teams in so they can get this done faster. So this is the next step. It's all subject, and we've made it clear that our agreement to pay is subject to the Army, and we've even included the Army's approval as an exhibit, so we've got those two tied together as an added layer of protection for you.
Sounds good.
These are the three copies for the chair to sign, and
okay, I'm good.
It's right there.
If it passes the Chris Horn test, I'm good.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far. That's why I explained it also. But I spent a lot of hours doing this math because I'm nobody's accountant. I mean, I can add and subtract as well as anybody. I was an old paper boy, but but going through those numbers and trying to make sure they all worked out took a lot of hours, and I wanted to make sure that they looked right. So we put some time in verifying them.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie. Great. Thanks, Chris.
Certainly, sir.
And just a side note on that, if you haven't been out there lately, we did recently make a bunch of updates to the website, trying to include, there's monthly reports, because every month there's a monthly report that comes out and goes to the Army and keeps them updated. And then also we've added, there's a map, you can actually see the progress of the work that they're doing and all the little grid that got them broken out into grids, and you can see what's been basically what's been paid, which means that's what's been completed.
Hey, what's the address for that?
You know, I can email it to you
okay.
if that works. I have a link here, but I think I have the wrong one. I'll send you the correct one. It's through the Public Works website in Camp Bonneville.
Okay. Was it you or Chris that told me that the FBI still trains out there from time to time? And the question I was hoping that we would work toward is that we allow our deputies to also train out there in the same facility, maybe? I don't know if that's possible.
And I believe that they already do. I've actually been out there a few times when they're actually out there. They actually did some improvements at the shooting range I think it was last year, as a matter of fact. And so actually I've seen several of the deputies out there as well as the FBI agents.
Oh,
so
great.
They're out there. And it's actually a good symbiotic relationship in that it's important to keep the security of the site out there. Mm-hmm. If you see them coming in and out, it works out really well. Mm-hmm. So.
And we have a man there full time for security. Uh-huh. Lives on site.
Yeah.
And that's good.
There's one fellow who lives on site.
There's actually two. There's Warren. I always forget his last name, but has been there for 20 some years. Is there, and
that's
then
what I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, and he knows the site very well. And then Jerry Barnett is the project manager and is leasing one of the properties on there. So there's two people there most of the time, and we did that for. I mean, some times they're going to be there, sometimes they're not, and there's a little bit of overlap.
Okay.
And then the third person is Greg Johnson, who's our munitions expert.
Okay. So. Great, thanks.
So. Good job.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, this is wonderful. You're quick.
He's going to stick around. The third item is the quiet zone, and I just wanted to touch base with you guys. This isn't a major update. We will have a work session coming up, but we're kind of at a stepping off point. You had approved us to spend some money on the quiet zone. I had worked with Heath and his budget on those expenditures, and we had a meeting last week with the project manager that we've hired, and then the rest of the team, which includes Steve Schulte, Tom Grange, a couple other people. But we invited Heath to come up and say, okay, here's where we're at. We're going to need to spend a little bit of money to get to where we need to go. Because the sticking point for this project has been stepping off and choosing a supplemental safety measure. And the reason that's difficult is it has to meet the federal rule under the FRA. It has to be cost effective, and it has to work. And so there's a number of combinations that we could do. You guys remember the intersection down there, but it's very steep. It's got steep banks that come down.
Yep.
It's narrow at the bottom. It takes a corner. And it's just a difficult... It's a wonderful place for a quiet zone because there's not a lot of road traffic, but it's a very difficult place to put a quiet zone in because of the geography. So
yeah.
The bottom line is what we're going to do, I talked to you a little bit last time, we're going to have a gentleman come up here that's going to do the wayside horn testing. There'll be a little bit of cost associated with that. What we want to do is a noise study, a real noise study, because no matter what we choose for a safety measure, for implementation, we're going to have a noise study to back it up, because we assume that the cost at this point is going to be such that the county can't pay it and go it alone. The neighborhood's going to have to get involved and put some skin in the game. And if we don't have a true good noise study that's solid to back up where that noise goes and how far it penetrates out into the neighborhood, we won't have a foundation to build a cost allocation model on. And so we're going to use the noise study during the wayside horn. We'll probably do it, I don't know how long you do these things, 3-5 days, to get a good indication of how that noise is traveling through the neighborhood, so that when we come back and if we have to do an RID or a transportation benefit district, we'll have a good foundation to base it on and say, well, we know that it's this many decibels at your house.
So it's not really a quiet zone. It's a different kind of a horn on the plane, on
well,
the train,
the
right?
One is the wayside horn demo. The wayside horn, the way that works is it's set to the rule minimum, which is 92 decibels at 100 feet, and it's very directional in nature. So yeah. Instead of like a really loud train whistle that goes off, you know, and blasts that noise everywhere, it's very directional, and it's right at the minimum of what you need. So arguably, it's considerably quieter. Some of the neighbors are very nervous about it because they live very close to the intersection there,
so
and they don't think it's
right
going to help
right.
them at all.
Yeah.
And so we've got to work through that issue. The third piece is when we went down this path last fall, we were trying to do the median solution because it was the most cost effective. But that road was too narrow, and nobody felt comfortable about it. The engineer, the construction manager, myself, and we kind of called it off, and we said, we're not going to do it because we can't get the east side of the road wide enough without cutting into the banks.
Yeah.
And no one felt good about that with the amount of water that's there. So we're going to get... the neighbors still like that plan because it's, again, cost-effective and it's quick. But it makes me nervous. I think it makes everybody nervous when we start cutting into the banks. So we're going to get someone to do a little bit of geotech work there and just tell us, what are we looking at? If we do have to cut into those slopes and put maybe some blocks or some barriers there to hold it up, what are we looking at to stabilize those slopes? How safe is it, and what would that cost be? Because it's just It just doesn't look, it just doesn't.
I thought we had another option, and that was a full gate.
We do, and we've got, we've done a lot, so I'm bringing up speed with some of the stuff we're going to do, but you're right, we just finished up, we've got some good solid cost estimates for the four quadrant gates, which is the most expensive one to go with, but it's also the most safe. What we're thinking is we could maybe hopefully put one quadrant gate on that uphill side that's too narrow for the median, and then maybe follow it up with a median on the west side on the marina, which would be a cheaper option, so do kind of a combination, and that might work. But we did get some solid cost estimates for the gates, so we're pretty good there. Okay. And we're good on the cost estimates for the wayside horn. The only one we're iffy on is the median if we have to bunk up the hillside, because that gets pretty expensive pretty quick.
But if you have a full gate, which is and that would be a cost that would be taken back to the neighborhood.
Yes, sir. Because you're so getting at $500,000-$600,000 bucks at that point if you're doing full four quadrant gates.
And then have just lights and gate and no horn.
If we did that, yeah, yep, that would make it a true quiet zone.
So when we go back, we'll have a test of the horn, and we can present that to the neighborhood up there and say, which one do you want to go with?
That's the idea, and to have that noise study to fall behind and say, you know, here's what it sounds like all day long, this is what you're listening to, and this is the decibels at your place. Here's how it sounds with a wayside horn. Maybe it's better, maybe it isn't. But if it isn't, and we're not going to do the wayside horn, here's what you're looking at for the cost for either a median, if that's still possible, or for the gates, or for a combination. But we need that noise study to fall back for a cost allocation scheme eventually.
So by going to a full gate, we wouldn't have to worry about cutting the hillside.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the reason we're going with the full gate is the fear of somebody going around the other side of the right. divider.
Yeah. So I just want to touch base with you and tell you that's kind of where we're heading the next month. So we'll bring it back to you in a work session. When we have that noise study and when we've done that demonstration, you know, we'll have a work session with you guys to tell you which way we're going on which safety measure.
So we're going to do a noise study before that on what we have there existing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have new meters, don't we?
Well, you'll probably have a professional do those, and the reason is essentially what you have to do if you want to go out to a transportation benefit district or an RID, what you have to do is determine a special benefit for every one of those property owners, and if we can't determine a benefit, then we can't assess them a cost. So if those people right next to the horn say it's just as loud as it was before, then I'm not benefited, and therefore they don't have to pay. Otherwise, you would break it out, and we have to figure out that there's a sufficient benefit to all the parties in the nearby area to justify paying it, or the county would have to make up the difference or choose another path.
Well, we got a lot into it so far.
Yes. Well, you've been working on it for about two years.
We've got a lot of staff time and effort into it. We don't have a lot of money necessarily into it yet, and that's why I'm bringing this, is because we're going to start spending a little bit of money to get to the answer. But
we didn't have to pay so much, I wouldn't worry about it.
Now,
I can't help you with that.
He was thinking I was going to go out there for a week with the noise test. I know exactly what he was thinking. Axel can take the decibel meter out there, set up a tent for a week.
Well, I think Heath has got a spare, like, colored vest you can wear.
This wayside horn, is that actually physically mounted there permanently so that the terrain's detection system triggers it?
Yep, it's automated, and it's directional, and it's mounted right to the tower that the arm is on. And one thing that you'll hear this when the citizen's coming, because we'll do a work session pretty soon. And the fear with the wayside horn is it is quieter, and it is directional, but it's very mechanical. It never misses a beat. And the other thing is, as that train comes chugging down the track, they're blowing that whistle three or four times about a quarter mile before the intersection. So it's actually a little bit ahead of where some of these folks live. So one of the fears that they have is this thing is going to be blowing right by where we live, and it's never going to miss a beat. It's you know, it's automated. It goes on time. It's going to be the same every time. And so there's some fear that it could actually end up being worse than the current horn.
No, if it's mechanical, it's mechanical. It'd be a shame to have it stick on.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's gonna do exactly what it's supposed to do every time.
So I would think before there's any commitment made, they would for sure want to be able to hear that thing. Bring your convertible and park in front of it.
Right? We're going to have this on a Saturday, and they're going to be able to be out in their yards, and we're going to this individual I've spoken to about doing the demo, he's all over the place, and that's all part of it is. And we're going to try to sync up the neighborhood noise study at the same time. So that will be going on while the Wayside Horn demo goes on. So we'll have real scientific measurable differences if there are any.
Great job. A lot of coordinating.
So it'll work.
Good.
All right.
Thanks.
1.4.
Thanks, Chris.
1.4 maybe not necessary. We just put it on there to touch base with you. We obviously have the interviews for the commissioner candidates
We've actually got responses from one of the candidates already.
One of the candidates turned their questions in already, but we've got those set up for the 27th at 1 p.m. And I just put it on there in case you guys had any questions or anything about process.
And we have paperwork coming back in this week.
It's supposed
to
be in tomorrow, what it said in the letter.
Did they get it in time? They'll be an extra day.
I think they had all been picked up by noon on Tuesday. By
10 o'clock
Tuesday.
Yesterday. I gave both Kelly and Ed were here at the hearing yesterday, so they got their questions. Yeah.
And Craig came in Monday?
He came in right at the close of business Monday because he had to be in Olympia, and he wouldn't have been here on Tuesday.
All right.
He was heading back up. So that's that. 1.5, I put that on here. We've got a good amount of applications for the policy assistant position, so I just want to touch base with the board. We probably have 70, 80 apps. Mark and I have begun kind of going through the first cut and doing some screening, narrowing it down. Typically, I think when I applied for this position, I think they did phone interviews for 12 or 15 folks. They tried to cut that number in half, and then I interviewed with a panel of people in this room, and then eventually that was cut in half again, and I think we interviewed three of us or four of us with the board, and the board made the selection. So I just wanted to touch base with you on that process, let you know we've got a ton of applications. We've been gun screening them, but I think, getting some selections or some feedback from the board on the overlap, where we might see some consistency and who we think is...
Goes to show you the process is not perfect.
Yeah, exactly. There can be flaws.
Not really. Actually, the system that we use to...
outstanding job for us.
Yeah. The way that we add or select candidates for the advisory groups, that system works pretty well. So Ann and I have been going through, and we've got our selections. And I guess, Tom, you got your selections.
It's amazing. He gave me a list of his candidates on a deal, and he circled his finalists. And I went through and on the same list, and I highlighted in yellow where we had duplications. And I think we duplicated or agreed on three or four.
Great.
But I still have probably 12. Other good candidates. I want to go back and review the ones that we didn't agree on.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where I am right now. It's all over my desk.
Okay.
But how about the layered interview process that Axel just talked about?
I would.
Because these folks work with staff. They work with directors and getting input from a wide range of folks to help whittle the list down, I think, would be useful.
Yeah. I definitely want to interview... I'd like to be eight or less.
Yeah, let's concentrate on us doing what we can to end up with a finite list, and that would be the smarter way for us to be able to make sure we don't end up with too many on the list to interview. We can just simply do that one-on-one.
I think we're beating it down. I had the interview list, and I was still up around 12, and then I had a maybe list.
Yeah.
Then I had a big pile of no's, And then you did the same thing, and I'm kind of combining.
Mark and I compared, and I think we ended up with about 15. We were around 15 that we had, you know, mutually screened through. So yeah,
that we agreed on.
Yeah, why don't you guys finish up and get yours, and then we can just bundle them and see where we want to go from there.
I think we're getting there.
Okay.
I hope to be farther along on that before I go home.
Have you completed your review? Have you got your list put together?
Yeah, pretty much.
Can you share it?
Anne has it.
Okay. Can we grab it from her?
Probably what I'm going to do after I get done.
Yeah, we'll have to do it during this meeting. We can do it after this meeting.
I think if it's okay with you, as soon as I get done, I'm going to go back and research where we didn't agree and look at those candidates again.
I'm
going to give you that same list, and you could circle in a different color pen or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll have that.
Okay.
So, we'll just kind of keep refining it.
Okay.
The next one I'm going to skip for now. We all know I've been working with Joe on a letter. He's been talking to the board, but I'm not.
Oh,
really,
Joe Levesque?
Yeah, I'm not really ready today to.
Yeah,
to
I've gone through it,
to you, so.
And I don't plan
to. Yeah,
we
talked to him. Yeah, that's why we're not talking about
all
it.
Right.
Yeah, I'll work with you guys on it this week. I have a 1.7.
You do?
Yeah.
You do?
If you'll let me do it.
Okay.
Mark, give me this. This is a request we got from Washington State Parks.
Oh.
They want to put a grant in to put new docks at, is it Battleground Lake?
Yep.
And they're asking, it's a good deal, so they're applying for grant money, and because it's in our county, we're hoping to get either a letter of support, which they've given us an example of, or a resolution if you want to go big.
Sure.
So either one of those.
So letter?
Whatever you guys think is most effective. So
okay.
Yeah.
Why don't I touch base with them and say, hey, if a resolution is going to make that big of an impact, I'll do it. Otherwise,
whatever
we'll
they prefer.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think this is a good thing.
Support about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I got a 1.8. Vanessa Gaston has asked that I chat with you about the Behavioral Health Organization.
Yep.
Apparently, there is going to be a gathering of a task force that is addressing the adult behavioral health service system, and that's on July 18th. And WASAC is asking the counties to tell them which region they would like to be in. So that they have that for that July 18th task force meeting, and they are asking for that information by 28 May. So
yeah.
Vanessa is strongly recommending that we stay in the Southwest Washington region.
Mm-hmm.
And if you both agree, she'll put a letter together to WASAC for your signature.
I think that, or I think that I understand where we are. We have concerns with the steps as have been moved forward. We have concerns because we're so much out in the lead of the rest of the state and the rest of the nation. And it's my understanding that other members of the RSN board, the other county members, are wanting to pick up one or two more members and then take away some of our voting power, even though we still represent two-thirds of it. Big concern as to what we're going to do. So as stands today, we are part of Southwest Washington, but if they take away our voting power, then we might be on our own. Personal thought.
Well, yeah, I think there's some thinking that Cowlitz wants to go and join with counties further to the north, and we're looking at Wakayakum and Skamania.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's kind
but
of
we would
river.
Remain the
so,
Southwest Washington.
So I have a big yellow flag up as to.
So we have to pick a region.
Yeah, so it's, as far as the state's concerned, we're still Southwest Washington. We might be our own.
Or the composition of that region might change. We might add one, drop one.
Right,
okay.
But we're still Southwest, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I have an update on that. We had a special RSN meeting, I guess it was on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And there's a three commissioner board, Skamania and Cowlitz. And the other two, my two fellow commissioners on that, they are ready to go on the next agenda, or should I say, we put it on the agenda for the next meeting to do several things. One is to change the voting weight of the existing organization from 3 Clark, 2 Cowlitz, 1 Skamania, to 2, 2, and 2, and add the tribe and make them 1. And that's one thing. The other is, well, there's really two things. It's really bringing the Cowlitz tribe onto the board, giving them a vote, even though our own prosecuting attorney here says they haven't responded to their liability commitment.
That's correct.
And there's also major structural changes to that organization that could very well end up becoming a 5-county-wide, where we got 2 more counties added to the 3, or a change of Cowlitz bowing out. And if they bow out, they take another county out also because of the 5, because they have to be adjacent, contiguous. And also there's major decisions that have to happen over the next year and a half or so. That the 2 options that are in front of us, one is to integrate behavior health with chemical dependency. That has to happen. But the other option is that that's what I call the two-step. The first step is that two, the combination of those two. And the third step is adding physical health to that. So one option is to simply take it in 2 steps like that. Mm-hmm. The other option is to do what they call an early adopter, which is to take all 3, merge them together at once in 1 step. All of this is on the table right now. And what I related to them is that as commissioners, our role there is to govern that particular organization and not to change the structure of it without the buy-in of our full board of commissioners in each of the affected counties. So I'm not ready to vote on to make any structural changes without this commission and without the attorneys for each of the counties making sure that they've got things worked out. They're the ones that actually change the structure. Anyway, it's on the agenda just simply because I want to be a good neighbor and don't want to block the way. It does force the conversation that says, well, at least we're going to start exploring and having some deliberation on this. But this work session with Vanessa, her leadership along with Dr. Alan Melnick on this, hugely important. They're very informed. And along with Chris, we need to make, I would expand this to include some of these other conversations about where do we want to go when it comes to these behavioral health, chemical dependency, right, and physical health.
Well, the memo they're looking for by the 28th is to address only the question.
All right. Well, I will be behind the scenes working with them along with David Kelly in order to make sure that that team is pulling together all the information they need in order to then bring options to us and then prepare another work session.
I think we're scheduled for the 10th. Or actually, that's on the agenda to talk about that.
Okay.
The work session on the behavioral health issue.
Okay.
So that's what Vanessa wants to talk about, the inclusion of only that chemical dependency.
No. Her work session is to discuss the full range of issues.
Oh, wow.
Recommended action.
And that date is when?
I think 10 June is, I think, what we scheduled.
And when's your date with RSN?
That would be 11th. 11
is
June.
It? Okay.
Yeah, let me double check.
So, timely, we wouldn't want to push it any further than that because we want to be able to get some direction.
Are you going to meet before that?
Yes, we have to.
So,
Vanessa's out through this Friday, so I have to be.
So, I recommend the message that you take back in behalf of us is that we haven't had time to confer with legal and Vanessa and our health department. Mm-hmm. I get concerned. Why is it that we're saying that this we have to do this right away and we're the only ones doing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the whole purpose of early adoption is, to get out in front of folks if it's the smart thing to do. And like Commissioner Madore said, do you want to get to the ultimate objective in 2 steps and create an organization and then get rid of it? Or do you want to proceed to the end result immediately? And
both of these are, these decisions are forced upon us by the two passages of bills, a House bill and a Senate bill, from this last legislative session. So like it or not, the state has dictated we will be going down this road. The question is, process is really important because there are a lot of unknowns. The way I see it is like we've got a map. Mm-hmm. Here we are, three commissioners in a car, and we got one destination here, which is the pairing up of two, another destination, which is three, where you got the physical health as well. And so we have to build the car, find out there's going to be three or five commissioners in it, and how you're going to navigate from here to there. And the state doesn't tell us how. They just say, what, and here's the deadlines. So there's a lot to discover between
them. What's the deadline that we're being told?
One actually is coming up here this fall. Vanessa, she's a wealth of information about this because she's part of the Regional Health Alliance along with Dr. Melnick. We've directed Kai Meng Ching, who is the executive director of the RSN, to join that board. And they're a big brainstorming outfit that, or group that represents a lot of the stakeholders in our area. And their prime focus is to make sure that we have local leadership and representation that looks out for our community, in contrast to the state dictating without our input.
Well, that's where I'm afraid of. At what point are they saying, okay, Clark County, you are now in charge of Obamacare. You are responsible to pay for all the health care of everybody in Clark County. Where does that money come from?
Well, the problem is, whatever the state says we got to do, we got to do.
No, we have a choice, and that's to give it back to the state. That was one of the choices we had earlier. Maybe that legislation changed that, but I don't know how they could have a mandate this large upon the county, which could be bigger than our budget.
Vanessa will be able to, she'll be a wealth of information for us to be able to ask those kind of real important questions.
Which is why she's asking for a work session.
Yeah. And I guess I'd like to know what the rest of the state's doing.
And she'll know. She's up on those two bills.
Clark County is out in front of the state and the rest of the United States on taking the lead on this. And it seems like our legislator, our governor, is shoving it down our throats to do this when no one else has done it, and we got all these unanswered questions. I don't want to wake up tomorrow and find out that Clark County has lost all of its health care.
Well, work session's coming.
Okay.
So Vanessa said she'd have that memo hopefully by Friday.
Yeah, I would. She's a wonderful, very informed, very competent leader. Whatever she suggests the direction on those things, I haven't differed with her on anything. She's been spot on when it comes to looking out for Clark County.
Okay. That takes us to commissioner reports.
I'm good.
You're good. I'm still pushing for the stormwater fees to go to hearing on the 27th.
Yeah, we're checking to see whether that's possible.
Okay.
Because there are...
What things do we have to do to get it to the hearing? Because it's just a notification.
We have to determine the length of time prior to the hearing that we have to give notice.
I think it's somewhere between 7 and 14 days.
Yeah. We're working with Chris on that, Chris Horn, to get a definitive.
I don't want to wait 3 days from now and say, we're 3 days short.
We'll schedule it as early as we can.
I want it the 27th.
If we can do that, we'll do it.
We should have an answer to that today.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned it 2 days ago. So.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't have any information on that. If you could feed me whatever the proposals are, I'd be happy to take a look at it and do my homework.
Is that a work session?
What proposals?
Hmm? Whatever.
Composition hearing plan. It's crystallized. We know what
to do.
Do
a hearing and resolution.
Okay. So it's an actual hearing.
Mm-hmm. So what is the time frame for notification on that?
For a hearing where you're going to be potentially talking about fees, it's probably 10 or 14 days. It's going to be a longer notice because of the type of hearing it is.
Yeah, and it, we can make a more obvious notice in the paper instead of a little blurb. We can pay a little extra money and, you know, get a full page or something to meet the requirement. We got to meet the requirement, and we're determining
what the requirement is. But I didn't think the size of the ad had anything to do with the requirement.
That's right.
It's either in there or it's out.
Well, special notice.
are you pulling my leg?
I'm not. I said it. Individual flyers.
Before you go home, we'll have the answer. We'll let you know.
That sounds good.
That's all I have.
Okay. We talked about the work session request for health. It sounds like green light to schedule that.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then there are two vacancy requests, both from public health.
I've looked at them both. I'm good.
Okay.
Both grant funded?
One 90% grant funded, one 85% grant funded.
Yep.
So good to go on both of those?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, that we go around the table?
Yeah.
If my sources are correct, there might be binders that you got from Bill Bjerke with BRAC members.
I like that preface. Can I steal that?
If my sources are correct. So just a heads up or reminder that if you do have those BRAC applications.
Do I?
I think you do.
I was wondering where they were. So.
I think you got them.
I don't know. I don't.
All right.
I'm not sure.
I'll confirm that on my way out of here.
Okay. Yeah, because I. All right. So it's in my office.
I think may have showed it to us, and the direction we said was to go with those people already sitting on the park board.
Okay.
Well that was an issue we tried to sort out a couple weeks ago.
And so we said, they all gave applications. You know, I might have that somewhere on my desk underneath the application for the.
I'm assuming that this is like all the other standardized ways that we appoint advisory boards, that there's a notebook, there are candidates, we get a copy of that notebook, we select candidates, we interview those, and we make a choice.
And my impression is you have that notebook in your offices. If that's not true and I'm incorrect, I apologize, but I'll check with Jennifer.
I remember I saw it, so I might have it.
All right. So just to remind you.
It could be really buried.
I don't think we're calling it a prac. There's no recreation.
Okay. No, there's it's going to be a Parks Advisory Board.
Yeah.
I think the PAB.
And we want to put them together as soon as possible so that they could be involved in the mission.
Which is why we're
asking
you to look for those binders.
I put a square.
What am I
right
supposed
there?
To do after I find it?
That's all.
How long have I had it?
I don't know.
Just say weeks.
Yeah, months.
You mean it's been more than a day?
I showed up when Anna was on vacation.
Oh, yeah. That's my excuse.
So what are we supposed to do with that binder?
I think you're supposed to select members for the PAB. I think that's what we're doing.
And we do just like any other advisory board. We get the notebook, we select our interviewees.
I remember there were two of the seated members
that couldn't get a
were not available, yeah. And I found out that there's at least one was on vacation out of the state, so that's all I know.
So,
okay, well, I'll
do my homework. What else we got?
Just you probably are aware, but just to bring to your attention that Jane Leonard, who was the graphic designer for the county for 22 and a half years, died last Thursday.
Really, I didn't know that. Oh, my goodness.
She'd been ill with cancer, and so that's the cover story on the newsletter today. Oh. And the service for her is at the Historical Museum at 5 o'clock on the 22nd, which is a Thursday. Yep, big from tomorrow.
All right. Anything else? We're done.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. All